Welcome to the Legally Speaking Podcast. You are now listening to season 7 of the show. I'm your host, Rob Hanna. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Jordana Cafinho. Jordana holds a JD from Yale Law School, a BA in psychology from Yale University, and certifications in coaching and applied positive psychology. She is a certified professional coach, positive lawyering professor, and founder of JC Coaching and Consulting. JC Coaching and Consulting is a company devoted to advancing the well-being of the legal profession through coaching and partnering with organizations to build positive workplace culture where all members feel valued, stimulated, as well as supported. Jordana is an adjunct professor at Fordham Law School, where she previously served as the Assistant Dean of Professionalism. In addition to overseeing the law school's wellness curriculum, Jordana teaches a one-of-a-kind course on positive lawyering, which empowers law students to use science-backed strategies of positive psychology to achieve greater satisfaction and sustainable success in their lives and work. She was voted Adjunct Law Professor of the Year in 2021. So, a very warm welcome, Jordana.
Thank you, Rob. I am delighted to be with you today.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And before we dive into all your amazing projects, experiences, and all the great stuff you've been doing for the legal community, we do have a customary icebreaker question here on the Legally Speaking Podcast, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being very real, what would you rate the hit TV series Suits in terms of its reality of the law if you've seen it?
I have seen it. Actually, I watched all of it last year because I had never seen it up until that point and was repeatedly told by both my law students and my non-lawyer husband that I couldn't call myself a lawyer without watching all of it. And with that, I can say a generous, generous 2 in terms of in terms of realisticness. And I would say just in terms of some of the attitude is more of the realistic part and less of the, you know, I'm going to just jump from my criminal to my civil matter to all of the different things in the most expensive outfit. And by the way, I'm a paralegal. So solid 2.
A solid 2, a justified 2. And I always say to people, you know, think of it, you know, maybe a heart surgeon isn't suddenly going to go and jump to be a foot doctor, to then be a hand doctor, to then be a head surgery expert, you know. So I think you've examined that very, very well and justified your 2.
Yes, yes. And I want to know all about these designer cars that they're driving all around the streets of New York City too, because I've never seen that before.
Well, with that, we should move swiftly on to talk all about you. So to begin with, would you mind telling our listeners a bit about your background and career journey?
Sure. So admittedly, I actually went to law school for all of the wrong reasons. I was a psychology major in college. I absolutely loved psychology. I was fascinated by everything related to social psychology. And yet when it came time to graduate, becoming a psychologist or a teacher, which is the other thing I was drawn to, just didn't feel like a thing that I should be doing at that time. All of my friends were going into banking and consulting and other kind of shiny things like that. And so I did what I think a lot of students in the US who don't know what they want to do is they go to law school, especially if they're good at taking tests, they're super type A, everyone's always told them they could be a good lawyer. And so I did that. And one thing that I had become really good at by that point in my life was just being a raging overachiever. And so I got to law school and I quickly set my sights on what are the shiniest things that I can do? What are the most competitive things? What are the most prestigious things? I want to do those things. And I was at Yale Law. And so a big shiny path there was the clerkship, big law, federal prosecutor route. So I was like, I want to do this thing. And I threw myself into it truly 150% and really lined up all the pieces to go that route. But I quickly in law school started realizing that I was nowhere near as energized or happy or fulfilled as I thought I wanted to be. And also looking forward to my future, I didn't really see it getting better because so many of the people that I was looking at in the profession when I was in my summer jobs just seemed really disenchanted and demoralized. And I kind of saw this, it bothered me, but I just kept pushing forward. And then ultimately, a few years into my career, I really just hit a burnout point and couldn't and didn't want to do it anymore. And it was at that point that actually this was, people don't believe me when I say this, but it was truly a last gasp Google search on how to be happy, because truly I was so unhappy and I desperately wanted to know how, that I discovered positive psychology, which is a science of human flourishing. And I ended up enrolling in a certification program on it because I really wanted to learn. And everything that I learned just blew my mind and revolutionized my formula for success. And I realized, oh my God, everything would have been so much better for me in law school and practice if I knew this. But no lawyers and law students know this. And so it was at that point that I was like, this is what I meant to do. I want to get the word out about these really powerful, but most importantly, actually learnable things, so that other law students and lawyers can not just avoid burning out, but actually go on to have satisfying, sustainable careers within the profession. So that's what I'm doing with my work now.
Yeah, and it's a hell of a journey, I have to say. And I can't wait to sort of, as we go through that, to learn more. But I want to take you back to Yale University days. Yep. Because you mentioned you completed your JD and BA there. What was your experience like studying at a sort of world-renowned university such as Yale?
It was fabulous. I love studying. So I love school. I always joke that if I won the lottery, I would just get all of the degrees because I have an insatiable love for learning. I loved my psychology classes. I really, really, really enjoyed all of that throughout college. And it's so interesting to me looking back now that it didn't even occur to me that maybe I should do something with that professionally because I was so engaged with it. At Yale Law School, what I will say is that I found my people there. I have made some wonderful, wonderful friends there. The work, the substance of the work itself, it felt really wrong to me. And honestly, the whole time, and honestly, this is probably because I had just at the outset picked the things that I thought that I should be doing, rather than really looking around and asking what are the things that are calling to me. Because honestly, even though law itself, practicing law, wasn't my passion, there was still so much interesting stuff there that I could have gotten involved with that would have been intrinsically rewarding and validating for me. But I just had these selection blinders on that it wasn't even relevant to me at the point what things would actually make me feel like I was fulfilled and that were validating. And so I think that I missed a lot of opportunities to really enjoy that experience because I was just looking at it as just a means to an end, which actually I think is the problem and one of the things that is preventing many, many lawyers and just high achieving people in general from ever being satisfied, is that they look at every single day and stage of their life as just a means to the next ends, which they think that once I get to this end point, then I will be happy and I can enjoy and live my life. But the problem is that we just push that goalpost further every single time that we get to it. And that's honestly, you know, I call it my if not now, when moment at the end when I realize, like, wow, there's always going to be that next thing. And I'm never, like, unless I decide to enjoy my life now and take the steps necessary to make that possible, this is never going to end.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, really thought provoking. I encourage people to sort of really delve deep into what you've just shared there, because it's so true. And I see that this side of the pond with lots of people as well, and particularly that shifting of goalposts. But I want to talk about your transition, because, you know, you did transition from law to psychology. Now you're the founder of JC Coaching and Consulting. But for people who may not be too familiar, can you tell us about JC Coaching and Consulting, what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So JC Coaching and Consulting is all about helping lawyers and other high-achieving professionals achieve greater satisfaction and meaning and fulfillment and sustainable success in their lives and work. And then also partnering with organizations within the profession to build more positive workplace cultures that really cultivate and facilitate those feelings among their employees. And this whole business actually grew directly out of a course that I teach at Fordham Law School, which is my positive lawyering course. And that course is, it's basically positive psychology for lawyers. So positive psychology for peak performance and peak well-being in your professional career as a lawyer. And I'll tell you more about that class in a little bit, but just connecting the dots here, I started teaching that 4 years ago, and it has hands down been the most rewarding thing I've done in my career to date. And a couple of years into teaching it, I was then getting calls from my former students who were saying, Jordana, there is no way that I would be surviving in my legal career right now if I hadn't taken that course. But we need more support out here. And also, someone needs to talk to our employers and our supervisors about all of these things that you're teaching us about, because all of the stuff that you're equipping us with, it's helping, but there's such an uphill battle in the profession. And so what JZ Coaching and Consulting is doing is it's coming at it from both bottom down and top up. So from bottom down, how can I help the individuals on the ground fortify themselves and create the most fulfilling, satisfying, successful lives that they can, given whatever context they're in or whatever context they elect to shift themselves into if that's something they want. And then, but also from the top down, what can we be doing to create places where, honestly, not lawyers and other professionals don't feel like they need to flee in order to find some other environment that would be conducive to them living their best life? And increasingly, there are more of those, but I will say within the profession, there's still few and far between. And the people at the top need more help. So that's another area of my focus.
Yeah. And I want to talk more about your focus, because what would you say are three frequent recurring challenges your clients tend to encounter?
Oh, so three recurring challenges. Burnout is a huge one. Another one I would say is the feeling, I'm trying to think of a word to encapsulate it, but basically ceaseless striving. So kind of what I was talking about earlier, just feeling like you are on this never-ending hamster wheel, and yet you're never actually getting to the end. You're never actually happy, feeling like you're missing your life, you know, working away, trying to get to this final destination that never actually materializes. And so I think that that's, which is different than burnout, because I actually think that people who burn out sometimes are luckier, because that then prompts them to reevaluate and change things in ways that then actually helps them like reclaim their lives in a way that is worthwhile for them. Whereas the people who just keep sprinting on the hamster wheel but never break down entirely, they might just miss it and think that there is no other way of doing things. So that's the second one. Second one is hamster wheel. And then the third one is, I would say, people that are just feeling isolated and disconnected. And so that can be from human connection or disconnected from the meaning and purpose in their work. And so it's not necessarily the ceaseless striving. It's not necessarily the burnout. They just don't have that sense of, they don't feel like they're as motivated or as engaged as they should be. And I know now that really that those feelings of connection and meaning are the fuel for engagement. And so this is something that I see both on the individual side, but also on the employer side. So on the employer side, all of this manifests as, you know, burnout, people quitting, or people not being motivated enough. How do we get more from our people? And the beauty of it is that the answer is both. It's the same on both sides. If you support the well-being of your people, if you foster all of these things that make them feel satisfied, connected, validated, valued, not only will it make them happier individually, it's going to make them so much more effective. And it'll make them stay longer, it'll make them get less sick, and it'll make them more productive. So it's kind of win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly believe, you know, looking after your people, doing the right thing, you know, treating them how you would like to be treated and not just saying it as words is so, so, so underrated even now, you know, in the modern world where we're seeing the importance of, you know, that human connection and really allowing ourselves to bring our true authentic selves to work. And,
you know, all of the things that, you know, we've been seeing for years and years and years. So I absolutely agree. I want to talk about limiting beliefs, because can you explain some of the limiting beliefs that prevent successful people from truly flourishing?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. And this is, if you ask me to say really in more basic words, what is JC Coaching and Consulting all about on the coaching side? It's helping high achievers get out of their own ways so they can step into their power, because it's amazing how deeply ingrained these assumptions are that we have that hold us back so much, even though we think that they're driving us forward. And so just two that come to mind. The first is that self-care or cultivating our well-being and success are mutually exclusive. This is something I believed so strongly when I was all through college and all through law school, and all of the science shows that it is not at all true, because actually fueling feelings of joy and connection, engagement, all of these things, rest, restoration, all of this is essential for peak performance, both in the long term to prevent us from burning out, but even on like a day by day, hour by hour basis. There's so many studies show that our brain functions so much better if we're nurturing it and nourishing it with all of these different things. And yet so many of us believe that it's just this, you know, it has to hurt. If it doesn't hurt, it's not working, and we just need to plow forward and more is always better. And honestly, maybe that's true at the very, very, very bottom levels when you're doing like almost menial grunt work, and in school when you're trying to get like just a right answer, just memorizing things, regurgitating things to check the boxes, it can work to a point. Even then, you know, with our brains, if we're underslept, you know, it's the research shows that if we pull an all-nighter, it's the same as cognitive impairment as legal intoxication. But putting that aside, bottom levels, but once you want to rise a little bit, if you want to add any creative any additive value, saying doing anything beyond what someone else has, replicating what someone else has done precisely, which is literally, you know, the only way to rise in any capacity, you need this energy and vitality and engagement in order to facilitate that. So that's the first one. The second one, which is actually something that I feel most strongly about, is perfectionism and self-criticism. Because perfectionism, I feel like, especially in the legal profession, is something that people wear as a badge of honor. They, you know, it's the humble brag. What's your weakness in a question in an interview? You say, oh, I'm such a perfectionist, because you think it's a good thing. We think it's helping us. We think it means that we have a drive for excellence, that we have super high standards, that we are meticulous attention to detail. And the truth is that it's actually different from all those things. And we can have all of those things without the defining features of perfectionism. And the defining features of perfectionism is the fear based motivation. So that fear that we're not good enough, and the belief that in order to make ourselves be better and make ourselves be good enough, we need to criticize ourselves and basically whip ourselves into submission and, you know, punish ourselves psychologically just with self-criticism when we fail, and cautioning against the dire results that would stem from failure. And all of that self-criticism, even though we think it's helping us, actually, the science shows drastically impairs both motivation and ability to learn and grow and perform. And so on the other side, self-compassion, which I think is something that many, many lawyers would not go near, like you wouldn't touch it with a 6-foot pole because they think it'll make them weak, lazy, and complacent. The truly, literally science-backed studies show that it is one of the number one driving factors for athletes, academics, professionals who have the greatest risk, greatest grit, greatest performance, greatest endurance, all of these things. So I think that limiting belief of I need to be punishing myself and scaring myself into performance is a huge one that we think is helping us, but really it's holding us back.
Yeah, like you said before, you've got to get out of your own way and you've got to get out of your own head. And sometimes you need to hear that from somebody else, because otherwise you end up believing these things and actually that's just so not true. So I absolutely just sat here just nodding, agreeing with everything you say. I think it's just bang on the money. I'm with that. I want to talk more about your journey. So you were, I believe, an adjunct professor at Fordham Law School. So what responsibilities do you have there? Just tell us a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm still an adjunct professor at Fordham. I teach both semesters and I teach two different classes there. So one is the class on positive lawyering, which is, I told you about positive psychology for lawyers. And then the other class that I teach is a class on peer mentoring and leadership. And that is actually, so we have a student peer mentor program and all of the mentors actually take this course where they learn how to be effective mentors, because actually there's a lot of skills that go into effective mentoring, and they're actually the same skills that are key leadership development skills. So communication, empathy, vulnerability, building trust and psychological safety, all of the things actually that I talk about in my leadership trainings that I do through JC Coaching Consulting, because I'll tell you, the organizations are behind the students in my peer mentoring course at this point on those capacities and really focusing on those interpersonal competencies that are essential for mentoring, which, as you and I have now talked about, is so important, because that's a really powerful way of creating those feelings of connection and belonging and engagement here with the other student mentees, but once they go out into the profession with the people that they're working with. So those are the two classes that I teach.
Yeah, and you're very busy, it has to be said, because also you're a former assistant dean of professionalism at the same law school. So what did your role play in enhancing professional development of law students?
Yes, absolutely. You are actually catching me on my final week as the assistant dean of professionalism. So I'm outgoing assistant dean, but continuing professor. And when Fordham hired me, it was a bit over 4 years ago, they did not have an office of professionalism. And so they were hiring me really to create, build, and launch this office that would be rolling out a robust suite of co-curricular offerings and academic courses focused on professional identity formation, which they interpreted to really include all of the social, emotional, interpersonal competencies that are necessary for lawyers to excel in their careers beyond the doctrinal and technical skills that they're learning in the classroom. And they viewed well-being as being a key component of that, which I love, because I couldn't believe more strongly, but especially 4 years ago. First of all, 4 years ago, no schools were talking about student professional identity formation, period, nor were they viewing well-being as an essential element of legal education. And Fordham was actually, to its credit, it was interested in doing both, which is why they wanted to create this office. And so what I did in that role was we built basically a whole curriculum that all of the incoming 1L students do through programs offered beginning at their orientation and throughout the 1L year, to really teach them these fundamental skills of growth mindset, cultivating your well-being, resilience, communication that we know will be essential for their formation as lawyers, and then also developing these upper year courses focused on these things. But it was really special putting it all together, because schools are increasingly starting to offer these types of things. And the ABA actually issued a requirement, a new standard for accreditation for law schools about a year ago, requiring schools to incorporate professional identity formation into their education models. And I was actually, it was involved with the lobbying for that. It was a much, much needed reform. And so now schools are like, okay, how do we plug it in there? But what Fordham did was they're like, we don't want to just plug it in, you know, in a one-off thing. We really want to embed it into the fabric of the institution, so that when students pick Fordham, one of the reasons is because it's known as a school that, in addition to its academic excellence and its excellent placement with firms and within the profession, the school that cares about its students, well-being and the human element of their education. So that's something that I'm really, really proud of.
Time for a short break from the show. Are you looking for a way to get your firm working more efficiently and profitably while ensuring a better work-life balance for your team? Well, if you haven't considered our sponsor, Clio, I'm here to strongly recommend that you do. I absolutely love working with Clio. Not only is it the world's leading legal practice management and legal client relationship management software, it also has a really solid core mission to transform the legal experience for all, something I personally support. What sets Clio apart for me, it's their dedication to customer success and support. There are lots of legal softwares out there, but I know from talking to Clio users that their support offering is miles ahead of the rest with their 24/5 availability via email, in-app chat, and over the phone. Yes, you can actually call in and speak to someone. Clio is also the G2 crowd leader in legal practice management in comparison to 130 legal practice management softwares and has been for the last 14 consecutive quarters. G2 Crowd is the world's leading business solutions review website. You can check Clio's full list of features and pricing at www.clio.com/legally-speaking. That's www.clio.com/legally-speaking. Now back to the show.
Yeah, and so you absolutely should be. And something else you should be super proud of as well is your teaching of one-of-a-kind course on positive lawyering, which we've touched on. But would you mind explaining more around the concept of positive lawyering and how it empowers legal professionals to achieve greater satisfaction and success? I think it's brilliant.
Absolutely. And yes, I love this class so much. Basically, so we start with what is positive psychology? So positive psychology is the study of the science of human flourishing. And the science piece is really important because one thing that I noted when you said earlier, Rob, you're like, oh, it's so important when I was talking about the power of self-compassion. You're like, it's so important to hear stories about this. And the stories are important, but for lawyers, for skeptical lawyers who are like, what? Self-compassion? No way. That's baloney. There's so much science to back all of these things up now. And actually what positive psychology has done is it's bringing neuroscience and other rigorous scientific studies to bear to back up things that a lot of people have had a sense is the case, and that, you know, Buddhist monks have just been going on faith for a long time saying that these effects are happening, and now we have the science to back it up. And the science, I think, is so helpful in terms of convincing people that this is worth the shot. But so it's the science of human flourishing. So how do not, whereas traditional psychology is focused on how do we take people from suffering to neutral? How do we diagnose and treat mental illness? Positive psychology is how do we take people from neutral to positive 10? What are the factors that promote optimal human functioning or thriving, and how can we cultivate them? And so what we do in the course is first we look at the really powerful connection between well-being and professional performance, because that's a hook that I know is really important to all of them. I want them to say, even if I don't care about being happy or healthy, I'm going to take this class because it's going to make me more effective. And the sneaky effect is that it's also going to make you happier and healthier in the process while it's making you more effective. The reason that's important to me is because when I was in law school, I didn't care about being happy or healthy. I just wanted to be successful. And so that's an important starting place. But then what are those foundational elements? So things like relationships, positive emotions, engagement, meaning, mindset. We look at the perfectionist mindset and self-compassion, boundary setting, and all of these different things that are all essential for well-being. And then I give them practical-based strategies that they can use to build these muscles and cultivate these capacities, because the really great thing is that positive psychology, for the most part, is about mindset shifts and little behavior changes, not radical changes in circumstances. And the whole point of it is that actually our whole overall well-being is governed by these little things that are in our control every day, even just going down to our mindset shift, which we can do without touching any circumstances. And so what I do is really train them how to make these changes, which is something that at first many of them don't think is possible. How can we possibly change our mindset? It's just how our brain works. But that we look at the power of neuroplasticity and the human ability to literally change the brain through repeated practice. And really, it just opens up a world of, you know, possibility and opportunity for them.
Yeah. And I always approach things with an open mindset. I think it's so important and staying curious. And, you know, I love how you're sort of just giving that really deep but really helpful overview for people to get their minds around this. And I guess I want to talk more on transformation, because you transformed your life by leveraging science of positive psychology and human motivation theory. And you're super passionate about helping others to do the same. So if someone wants to do the same, how can they start?
How can they start? So what I would say, so a key starting point would be, I think really, and there's so many different places where you could start, but I think starting with your relationship with yourself is one of the most important starting points, because this is something that I recognized on my own journey. I started focusing on a lot of the external things first, not even necessarily external, but not my relationship with myself. So meaning and engagement, I told you before, really, really important for well-being. Same with relationships. So I started focusing on those things. How can I align my work better with my values? I actually shifted into teaching positive psychology. How can I cultivate my relationships better? I started doing those things. But I was still tearing myself apart from the inside out, kind of driven by that fundamental fear of not being good enough, of not being worthy, that self-criticism. And I realized that you can only do so much to build yourself up from the outside if you're tearing yourself down from the inside. And so I actually think that one of the most powerful things that someone could do to get started is just Google the power of self-compassion, or I have a self-compassion guide that lays out the science. Look at that and just don't just take me on faith. Believe that this is something that will be worthwhile for you in basically every single way. And then pay attention to your thoughts in like as they come up, when you notice yourself criticizing yourself, and just notice that thought and don't judge it, because that's literally how we're wired to think. And then, but also don't run away with it and kind of be like, I see you, inner self-critical thought, and I know that you're trying to help me, but I also know that really you're just generating unnecessary anxiety and, you know, shame, and actually preventing me from what I want to do. So I'm going to put you aside. And then say to yourself what you would say to a dear friend who was in your situation and was saying those things about yourself. And that's just like a very basic self-compassion practice. And you won't believe that thought at all when you first start doing it. But keep practicing noticing your self-critical thoughts and just replacing them with that. And as you do that over time, you will notice that more compassionate voice growing stronger and the self-critical one diminishing, and you will actually be blown away that it will make you so much more effective, because it will take the fear and the anxiety away slightly, even if it's just a little bit, which will enable you to really objectively assess what it is that you want to do, how you can do it better, and keep moving forward. Also, you won't be exhausted for kind of tearing yourself apart. So that's one starting place.
I think that's probably the absolute best starting place right there, because, you know, so many people would be listening to that resonating, going through exactly that. So thank you for giving that. What I also mentioned in my last question is probably other things people might be thinking that they don't quite know what that is specifically, but what is human motivation theory?
Human motivation theory. So this is really important for or the organization side, well, really for the individual too, but I focus on this especially when I'm talking to leaders. So human self-determination theory, it's a fundamental psychological theory of human motivation. So what do humans need in order to experience the greatest possible intrinsic motivation, which science also shows is directly correlated with their productivity, their performance, and in really every metric. And so what they've found is that there's three core psychological needs that that must be fulfilled in order for humans to experience optimal engagement. So one is feelings of relatedness. So that's the feeling of connection, belonging, feeling like you're valued, like you matter to the people around you. Another is feelings of competence. So a sense that you're capable and you're good at what you're doing, a sense of mastery. And the third one is really important and is so misunderstood or just completely ignored, I feel like, within the profession. And it's feelings of autonomy, but that's not exactly what you might assume for it to mean. So part of it is the ability to act independently and with a sense of agency. But it's also another component of it is really authenticity, because it's feeling like you are acting in a way that's consistent with your authentic self or in line with your values. And so that really what it involves is finding a way to align what you're doing with what your core values are, and also just having an understanding of why it is that you're doing what you're doing. And two examples of ways that this could help people in literally whatever job they're in, because one thing that students always say to me when I tell them the importance of values alignment in your work, they're like, well, that's great for people that are pursuing their passion project jobs, but I work in big law, so what am I supposed to do with this? And there's two things. So one is that there's something called cognitive job crafting, and this is basically reframing how you construe the purpose of your work in order to make it align with your values. And so you can do this by looking at, you know, how you're furthering the core mission of either your firm or the client, or how your work is helping you develop some skills that bring you towards your goals, or how it's helping you serve your family. So really just looking at what you're doing in a different way, in a way that enables it to connect to your core values, and that alone can dramatically enhance your sense of meaning and purpose within your job, even if it's not, you know, your obvious passion project job. And it's really interesting. There's studies on this showing that, like, hospital workers who view, or hospital janitors, I'm sorry, who view their work as being themselves as being essential members of the team of healers, they are so much more engaged in your jobs, they have greater longevity in their jobs, they have better health, they have better well-being, all of these positive things just by construing changing how they're construing the purpose of your work. And so that's something that someone could do in any role that they're in.
Yeah. And again, it's just fascinating stuff. You know, when you sort of, you know, really, as I mentioned before, open yourself up to deeper learning and understanding this is super powerful, can transform your whole mindset, your life, your overall well-being. So it's brilliant. And thank you so much for giving such, you know, really complex, but also really, really important answers to the questions. And I want to talk a bit more about your blog. Because In the Chronicles of a Recovering Type A Plus Perfectionist, you share stories and offer science-backed tips and strategies for reigning in fear and cultivating joy and love. A lot of what we've been talking about, and values-based living in our crazy cutthroat world. So what are some of the science-based strategies you can share with us, or you want to kind of really hammer home from today?
Oh my goodness. Well, so I will just say the self-compassion stuff is huge. And so just kind of rewind, listen to that part again, download the self-compassion guide. That's huge. How do we cultivate joy and love and values-based living? Oh, there are so many ways. Well, first, subscribe to the blog, read all of them. But values is hugely important, because, I mean, we were literally just talking about why values alignment is so important. And what I think was definitely true of me, and I discovered values, that they were a thing that I might think about, on my therapist couch, my 2L summer of law school, when I was spending my summer at a big firm, and I just felt like things were so, so wrong. I started seeing this therapist to try to get a handle on my anxiety. And one of the things that she had me do was a basic values discovery exercise, where basically she gave me a list of 100 values and was like, identify the ones that are most important to you, the top five. And then let's talk about how what you're doing with your time and energy, which I was 150% into my work, as we talked about, is aligning with those values. And I realized two things that really kind of blew my mind. The first was I was spending literally all my time and energy doing things that were not only not furthering my values, that were actually contrary to them, one. But the crazier thing to me was I had never stopped to think about what my values were in the first place. It literally never even occurred to me that that was something I could or should be thinking about. And so first, getting clear on what your values are. What is your why? What are the things that you really, really, really care about? Because what that enables you to do is then take stock about, you know, to what extent are you honoring those or not? And then more importantly, how can you honor them more fully? Because as we just discussed, that will not only make you happier and more fulfilled and have a greater sense of purpose. Also, like, what is the point of life if you're ignoring the things that are most important to you? It'll also, you can find ways to connect with that within your work, whatever it is, and that will make you more effective. And so I think that identifying and finding ways to honor your values is another really core thing. And I actually, I'll share it with you, Rob, for the show notes. I have another guide that I discovered or developed, a values discovery guide, that is basically a much more comprehensive version of that very basic exercise that I did on my therapist couch years ago. And so I've fully fleshed it out, and it really walks you through everywhere from values identification to implementation. What steps do you take? That's another one. And just one more thing that I would say is rewiring your brain to just notice the positive things that are already in your life, because all humans have a really strong evolutionarily based negativity bias, which is that our brains are hardwired to focus in on all the negative things because that helps keep us alive. Then, of course, legal training compounds that infinitely because we are literally trained to spot issues. That is what law students are taught to do. That's what they're graded on. So our brains, because of neuroplasticity, when we think in ways repeatedly, that way of thinking becomes more natural, instinctive, and deeply ingrained. We learn to unconsciously look for issues, look for problems, look for mistakes, flaws, faults everywhere we look. And the problem is that doesn't turn off when we're not in the classroom or the courtroom anymore. And so it spills over into the way that we look at ourselves and the world around us. And that makes us more likely to overstate our mistakes and minimize our achievements and also just not notice the positive things. So a very, very simple exercise that you can do to counteract this is it's called the three good things exercise. And simply make a practice of writing down three good things that happened in the past 24 hours every single day. Or you can do what I like to do with my husband, which is you exchange your three good things. So instead of writing it down, you just share them, you know, when you're making dinner, your three good things. And they could be as huge or minor as you want them to be. So it could be as minor as like the sun is shining today, or I had a great cup of coffee. And it's not that just reflecting on the good things creates positive emotions, although it usually does a little bit. But what it does is it trains your brain to begin a habit of looking for the good things, because if you know that you have to write down three good things at the end of your day, you will start looking for good things throughout your day. And the result of that is that you will notice so many more good things that were always there, but you were just missing them because you were racing through your life on autopilot and only like the negative or most urgent things were calling out for your attention. And so that simple practice alone, which literally takes a minute to complete every day, has been shown to dramatically reduce depression and increase happiness and reduce stress. And in fact, just because I want to make this additional compelling to try it, it's been proven to be so effective that the U.S. military has incorporated this practice into its Master Resilience Training Program. But they call it, instead of the three good things exercise, and I think this is funny, they call it the hunt the good stuff exercise. So I encourage everyone to hunt the good stuff or do your daily three good things, because truly it's a minute and you have nothing to lose and a lot to gain.
Three words. That was amazing, right? So having an attitude of gratitude, and I think you really sort of articulated that crystal clear. Again, I'm just sat here nodding, agreeing. And it's so important for lawyers and law students to really focus on their well-being and mental health. You know, it's work, but it's really worthwhile work putting in. And before we look to sort of close, Jordana, what advice would you give to aspiring lawyers who may find themselves caught on the overachiever's treadmill, which we've touched on, and seeking a more balanced, fulfilling approach to their careers?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say ask yourself what your goal is. And whatever comes to mind, then ask yourself how you think you'll feel when you get that goal. Because that feeling of satisfaction and enoughness, that's your real goal. You want to feel that way. And what I want to tell you is that achieving some external thing will never, ever, ever, ever make you feel that way. But you can do things to make yourself feel that way, to cultivate those internal feelings of enoughness and satisfaction. And doing that work, which is completely different from the work to get whatever external thing you think right now will give you that feeling, will not only help give you that feeling, but it'll also increase your motivation and help you get whatever those external things are too. So I would really focus on how do you create those intrinsic feelings of well-being, the relatedness, the connection, the joy, the meaning and purpose, and cultivating those feelings of self-compassion and self-worth for yourself. Because I really believe, having kind of gone through everything, that true success, which I think applies to everyone, is living a life that's driven by your values, not by fear. And so when you are being called to do something, I would ask yourself, like, is this my fear driving me to do it? Or is this something that really furthers my values, whatever those values are? Because there's no wrong values. Figure out what your values are and then move towards those. And when the fear pops up, like I said before about the self-criticism, say hi to it and then treat yourself with some self-compassion and recognize, of course, we're going to have fear, but we can never get rid of fear, but we can always take one step away from the fear towards our values. And that's where freedom is. That's where success is. And that's really where life is. So
true success.
That's what I would give them.
Yeah, I love that. True success, living a life in line with your values. I just think that is neat. That is tidy. And I think it just really is a hammer home message, because so many people are unfortunately not in line with their values. And that's where you have to be prepared and speak to great people like yourself to sort of break out of maybe where they are currently to get onto that track. And I guess as we finally look to reflect on your journey, Jordana, what is the most significant lesson you have learned about happiness, success, and the practice of law alongside psychology?
Oh, I think it's what I just said to you. I think it's what I just said to you right there. And I think that it is, honestly, I think that it's that the two are intertwined, and that the being the best lawyer, being the best anything that you want to be, will require cultivating these foundational elements of your own psychology and your own well-being, and not viewing the two as distinct, but looking at how they can fuel each other. And because my number one value is love, and the one thing that I want to say is none of this is easy, and none of this is automatic, and none of this is one and done. So keep reminding of yourself of these things. And I'm showing you, Rob, I literally have a bracelet on that says remember love, because there is a whole profession out there right now, and a whole world, really, a whole culture that is set up to pull you away from doing everything we've been talking about. And so don't beat yourself up if you're not doing them, but build in little practices, little reminders that help you keep doing these practices, that will help you stay tethered to what's actually most important to you, so you don't lose sight of it. Because that, you know, anchoring yourself in on what's most important is really where it's all at. And that will make you happier, but it'll also make you so much more effective. And it'll really give you a career that you love, rather than just, you know, something where at the end of the day, you're like, I'm exhausted and what's it all been for? And who needs that?
Who does need that? And I think that's a very good way to sort of, you know, share your sort of final words of wisdom. And if our listeners, which I'm sure they absolutely will off the back of today, want to learn more about your career, Yale Law School, Fordham Law School, or JC Coaching and Consulting, where can they find out more? And if people want to get in touch about anything else we've discussed, what's the best way for them to contact you? Feel free to shout out any social media handles and web links, and we'll share them as this episode too.
Awesome. Yeah. The best way to find out more about me is on my website, jordanaconfino.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn, Jordana Confino. So please find me there. We'll share links to the different guides that I've talked about. And I love, love, love to hear from people who are interested in this stuff and want to learn more about it. And so if you any of this intrigues you, please feel free to reach out. If you do the guide, let me know how they go. And also the one thing that I just want to add on to that, everything I've said before, is if you're listening to all of this and you think that all sounds great, but I can't possibly do it because it's so far away from what I'm thinking, I promise you, I was so far in the other direction. If I can do this, anyone can, and it is so worth striving for. So thank you so much, Rob, for giving me the opportunity to chat with you today.
Oh, well, thank you so, so much, Jordana. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, learning more about your career. So wishing you lots of continued success with that and for the future. But now, from all of us on the Legally Speaking Podcast, over and out. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you like the content here, why not check out our world-leading content and collaboration hub, the Legally Speaking Club, over on Discord. Go to our website, www.legallyspeakingpodcast.com, for the link to join our community there. Over and out.